Blog Talk Radio.
In the 70s in Long Island, New York, and tonight we're going to get right into it. Amy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, the Montauk Project started in Long Island, New York as a program for mind manipulation, correct?
Apparently, from what I was reading about it, now, usually, I didn't know about it until you mentioned it to me, and so I did some research on it, and I found out it was related to the Philadelphia experiment, which is something I've been researching for a while, having to do with my own writing, you know, wondering exactly what happened and, you know, if there was objective kind of reports to it, and apparently it bridged this time portal, or time tunnel, as they call it, between the Philadelphia experiment, which is 1943, and New Jersey and New York in 1983. And, you know, do you have anything to further add to that?
Yes, and you pretty much hit it on the dime. The Philadelphia experiment was a experiment created to hide ships in World War II from the Nazis. And basically what it would do is it would take ships and basically make them invisible and transport matter across planes. Of energy. Basically, when I see planes of energy, I mean, how do you explain this? Well, basically, what I mean by that is when you have
the unified field theory.
Yes, basically, yeah, like that. It would take the energy, and it would turn it into these small particles that would evaporate into the air, and then it would reform itself, causing it to become visible. And it's a little bit out there, I know, but this is what was talked about.
Well, the unified field theory was presented, I think, by, was it Einstein?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms
would,
of to describe mathematically and physically the interrelated nature of the forces that combined electromagnetic radiation and gravity.
Yeah, the best way to describe it is like when ships and like movies are like traveling at warp speed and they like traveling and then the ship just magically appears again, where the particles of the ship just form itself again. That's kind of like what they were talking about with the Feldhoff experiment. They were talking about taking a ship, turning it into particles, and then allowing it, and then forming it back again. It's pretty weird. It's a little unusual. I know that, for instance, well, we've already done this. In Australia, they got teleported data into these fine particles and then got the particles and transmitted it into another teleportation device that was located somewhere in Asia. I don't know where in Asia they were doing it, but they were doing it somewhere in Asia. You can go look it up. But they basically got the ship, transported into particles, and then rearranged it, making it invisible to the enemy. It's pretty weird. But the problem with that was that a lot of things happen, and like body parts like would not be where they were supposed to be, and
which
and,
is what
and all the DNA
happened during the Philadelphia experiment.
Yeah, like the DNA sequences got mixed up in the ship, and you had body parts everywhere, and it didn't really work out so well. And this is what kind of leads on into the Montauk project, because this was kind of before the Montauk project. This happened right after the Manhattan project. This was meant to, this is prototype stuff. They tried to do it. It's pretty weird. Too bad I can't like post a video and kind of show an example, but yeah. Basically, the Montauk project took after this, because what they had tried to do was Tesla had made this energy coil, and basically, there's a quote I like. What was it? It had something to do with vibrations, and basically what they were able to do was they were trying to learn how to manipulate energy on different planes and rearrange and energy, and they were trying to do this. And one of the things they really wanted to do was to send people into time and space. And basically, they kind of found a way to take almost kind of like astral projects of the soul into the place they wanted that person to go. And as I was talking about, in, I think like last episode, no, two episodes ago, we were getting into that. Now, basically what they were able to do was create these almost like wormholes, but they were able to travel into the different wormholes and basically do work for the government and do whatever they wanted to do. They were kind of like brainwashed into like these puppets, I guess you want to call it, where they just send a frequency and then they just like listen, because in your brain they were able to unlock this part of the brain where they could basically, it's pretty weird, but it's like your mind and your thoughts really aren't your own thoughts and your own mind. It's been replaced by an artificial mind and thoughts. It's pretty weird. It's almost kind of like.
So, do you know what technology?
Almost kind of like.
Does it say what technology
does like
this?
Your thinking. Yeah, it's like you're thinking, but they're really not your thoughts. Like, they could take out a thought and then put another thought in into your mind.
You could have the memory that you ate a blueberry pie, and they could change it to where you remember that you ate a strawberry pie.
Yeah, basically, and that's what the Montauk project was mind manipulation, and it was, and we can actually do that now, in like, commercial, who commercially, if you go to a psychologist, there are psychologists out there who will actually, what's the word I want? They can actually change your memory. They could actually, you could pay them. You could pay a psychologist and say, I want to remember my ex-girlfriend being super hot. And they'll actually take the memory of your ex-girlfriend and, I'm just making up an example, and then replace it with the memory that you want to remember. And I'm not making this up. You could, out there right now, you can go pay to have this done. I don't remember the scientific name for it, but you could, I mean, it's possible. And this all started with the Montauk Project. Yeah, it's pretty weird. I mean, imagine, like, if they were able to just send out a ray and make people think, like, for instance, something got out in the government, and the government was like, oh, my God, we didn't want people to know that. So they send out these electrical waves of energy that get transmitted, and they could actually reformat your thought into making that whatever happened and then make everyone forget what happened. It's really weird. Do you want to add anything, Amy? Sorry, I kind of took off there.
No, it's okay. In my research on this, the connection to the Philadelphia experiment is the fact that it's in New York. It's one of those experiments that apparently it was very wide scale. One of the people claimed that there's 300,000 participants. And he said, you know, their minds were played with, their minds were manipulated, matter was manipulated, but only 1% survived. You know, to me, how do you account for that amount of loss? I mean,
yeah,
I know people go missing every year, and people, you know, remains are found every year from either serial killings, accidental deaths, or, you know, whatever. But how do you rationalize all of that into thinking about, this is what happened? Apparently, there was an interview also done with the children of the survivor. But the survivor was actually from the Eldridge.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
No, and I really wish, because people are kind of, like, wondering, like, how can you get a ship and, like, transmit it over, like, air and stuff. Like, I really wish, you know what, next show, I'm going to have to post it in the show description. Or I'll edit the show and I'll put it in there as, like, an example to show people what I'm talking about, because I'm probably not really understanding. Yeah, you know what? I'll do that. I'll do it after the show. I'll post an example in case if you want to see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
About air particles and quantum particles and all that good stuff. Yeah, I'll have to post the article. All right, I'm sorry.
There's another theory, but I was looking into this, some Russian defector, Enrico Chekhov, who's a Spanish-Russian dissident, they say, said in the late 80s that after he defected to America, he said that satellite surveillance captured during the 1970s showed the formation of a large bubble of space-time centered on the site. How would he know that? How would he know it was a bubble of space-time? And he says, it was... convenient that after he mentioned this, his Manhattan apartment was burglarized. Like, there's a lot of, like, this is the trouble I was having looking into this subject. And I'm very curious about it, just to see on the scientific end of what they found and, you know, all the stories and, you know, they say conspiracy theories, but, you know, it's all of a perspective. It's like all the stories out there. What are the stories? What are the facts? What can you, you know, put on the table and say, look, this happened. And that's one of those, you can't say that it happened because there is no proof. It's the voice of one person. But, I mean, I can understand, you know, the Cold War happening in the 80s and saying, you know, my entire apartment was burglarized. But they also claim that Nikola Tesla faked his own death and was still alive when this project was taking place within the between the 50s and the 80s, which he would have been over 120 years old. That's another one of those ones that, are you sure? Is it, you know, they go from, well, just mind manipulation and the science, you know, basing it with science, the matter manipulation, the thought, things that can be actually broken down by physics. And then they say, oh, well, Tesla's 200 years old, almost 200 years old. You're going to have to include this in the whole thing.
Yeah, and like, you know, basically, well, basically,
but I mean, what have you found that has been more on the scientific end rather than conjecture?
What's that?
What have you found that has been on the more studied, photographed proof and rather than conjecture and hearsay?
What do you mean, like photographic proof to compare to what?
Well,
I'm having a hard time. I'm sorry.
Hearsay, to say that, oh, someone claimed that Nikola Tesla was still alive. Well, who was that someone who claimed it? And how is he involved in this project? You know, that's conjecture. But how do you, what have you found so far that says there's people that have been interviewed, there's people that have photographs of things or knowledge of things that existed, and they've talked about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Nikola Tesla did things on the side that we don't know about. I don't know.
No, but I mean, you know, what's the difference between, are there people who have been interviewed that say, I was there, or have... has it been hearsay by, like, an author that said, well, I spoke to person X and they said they were there. Are there names for people that were there?
I think it's more hearsay.
It's more hearsay?
I think it's more hearsay, yeah.
Hmm.
Because, well, most of the people they took in the project were mostly young males, few females. They just picked a few females just to test with and use, but they mostly wanted males because their energy projected outward and using...
They wanted a more aggressive specimen.
Yeah. Well, women were more used for... I mean, yeah, they were involved with it too, but they were more just to test if girls could do it as well. But, I mean, some girls were used further in the project, but basically the males were used as, basically they were sent to wherever they wanted them to go in the past, the present, not to say the future, or maybe a different dimension that they were basically just discovering. And the easy way to use kids for it is because their minds are a little bit easier and they're not going to question anything.
Yeah.
And some of these kids, like, what's the word? They ended up, like, having, like, in the video, in the documentary, that you'll see on YouTube. If you go on YouTube and you look at some of the people that were talking about being there or supposedly being there, they were like talking about how they have nightmares and how their thoughts have been replaced. They basically don't have an identity. That's basically the point I want to get at. I think that's the most important thing to get out of these people is that they don't have an identity. They don't have a self. You know,
they were either placed in a family or as children,
yeah,
ripped from their families, reprogrammed, or led to believe other things, and then plopped back into society, maybe even without their family or who they grew up with.
Yeah, well, basically, their self has been genetically altered to fit the model that they wanted these people to be in doing their work for them. Different planes of energy, or in the past or future. I mean, you hear like some of the like that guy. Well, there's a one guy on a YouTube video that was doing a documentary for the Long Island Hamptons News, something like that, and. You could look it up on YouTube, but they were talking about how he felt when he tried to cleanse his mind and create his own thoughts and his own self. And he said it was so hard because he had to separate his artificial self from his real self. And it got pretty deep where he'll get, like, nightmares and things now. But, you know, what's the best way I want to describe it as? You know, have you ever seen The Bourne Identity?
Yes, I saw the later one when they have actually a different guy. It's the guy who plays the arrow.
Yeah, well, it's the same concept. It's the same concept. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
Basically...
They're basically scrubbed for an identity, given a new one. Like,
yeah, basically, that's basically what happens. And when they do these missions or whatever work they're doing, the government, they basically are told what to do and when to do it and where to go. And no one knows what they were exactly doing. We don't know, like, what they're doing or why they're there.
Yeah.
But one of the ideas is that they were just testing for now. But there was, like, I have not had, like, found a documentary where they were talking about what they actually did. But it sounds like they were just doing like experiments and testing them, but I don't know because I don't have any like documentary that I've watched so far on it that I could say what they were doing. But basically, the Montauk Project, like now, is if you go to Long Island, you can go to Montauk. You can go see the laboratory they were doing all the tests in. I mean, you could just walk around, look around. Yeah, but it's empty now. There's nothing there. You can go in and look around and things. Yeah, it's a park now. It's empty. But they did some pretty weird stuff there. Anyway, Amy.
But all the conspiracy theories are saying that the entire project was underground. At Montauk. The reason that they based all this stuff there is that the array, the radar that they had set up for World War II, or was it the Cold War? Was it World War II? I think it was World War II. They set it up for a specific purpose, and that purpose was becoming obsolete. And so they repurposed it, and they figured out, oh, well, this array, this radar antenna, can broadcast the signals that we need for these experiments, you know, to, as you said, to alter the human thought. You know, this is the frequency to enter the human mind. Let's use this antenna because, it's not being used anymore. And something I was reading about, they basically approached Congress about it, taking the base over. It was an Air Force base, I guess. And they approached Congress about it. Congress said, no, that, we're not going to let you do this because it's wrong. You know, we don't believe in doing things like this to our own people. No. You know, they just, like, shoved it off their desk into the trash. You know, never heard from again. Well, they went to the Defense Department and said, hey, guys, we have this weapon here. You guys want to pay to develop a weapon? And according to the theories, the quote-unquote black budget of the military that nobody knows about, but is huge in comparison to, like, say, like, soldier salaries, you know, Homeland Security and all this other stuff. Huge, infinite budget that nobody really knows where the money goes. Back then said, hey, you have a weapon? Really? We'll buy it. We'll fund you. Just don't tell anybody about what you're doing. We'll funnel in the money to you. Whatever you need, we'll give you. Just give us a weapon within, like, a couple of years. And so they, that's the conspiracy theory, is there's this whole underground base there, but nobody's seen any bulldozers, nobody's seen any construction. You know, you think that something like that, of that magnitude, would produce something akin to the Bermuda Triangle. You know, it would create, like, this uncertain area of, like, time and space with all the experiments they're supposedly doing on people and matter and antimatter or time and space, that they would notice what's going on. But apparently nobody has. What do you think about that?
Yeah, basically you're correct. Well, the underground part, yes, it's true. That project was underground, but that base there, Montauk, is no longer used. Obviously, they're not going to use a base that people know about. Well, I'm going to base my opinion, but I mean, it has no weight. But basically, they took the project. I mean, I believe it's still in effect, but they basically did move it underground. They don't, like, have, like, experiments above ground anymore. They don't do anything, like, above ground because it's too, what's the word? It's too risky. Most of, like, the projects
now are
done,
like, underground.
So you think
there's, like, underground tunnels connected to the space so that nobody sees them moving people onto their property and then down into the ground?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in Montauk and that, hold on, in that, the laboratory, yeah, I mean, there is an underground part of it, but I think it's completely empty now. I mean, I wouldn't want to know what's down there.
You think the experiments are done?
No. I think they're still going on, but not there.
So what do you think has happened to the people involved in these projects, if they lived? I mean, according to one of the documentaries.
They're probably crazy now. Like, honestly, I think they're, like, mentally insane.
Yeah, one of the documentaries I was watching about the Montauk Project, I wasn't sure what to believe
from it.
Yeah, I
know, I sent you that one.
They said that in sacrifice of being telepathic and having, you know, telekinetic powers, we sacrifice being slightly schizophrenic and manic depressive and all these other, like, mental handicaps that were, you know, hit or miss depending on the subject. And it was like, you know, you wonder how these adults would sort of say yes to this if they weren't already institutionalized. But there's a rumor. A rumor within these conspiracy theories that a lot of the subjects were children, that they didn't have a say, that they were orphans or, you know, unwanted people.
They were orphans. Yeah, I mean, they were orphans. I mean, now they probably use adults, but I mean,
it's still
underground,
going on
I don't
now.
Know what's underground. Yeah, I do think it's going on now still. Why would they give it up? I don't see the point. I don't see why they just stop doing it.
You know, it's interesting, you know, to think of this on like a sort of a social level of Nancy Reagan, who's a psychic, astrologer type person. I think it was Jean Dixon she used. She was a pretty popular psychic. You know, a lot of key figures in history used these gifted people for their own benefit. Are they breeding gifted people to help governments? Are they breeding gifted people to become soldiers? Are they breeding gifted people to become weapons? You know, are they finding gifted people or are they making them? You know, there's a lot of questions that, you know, because of what they found and have, you know, what happened with the Manhattan Project? Oh, well, we found out that this affects the psychic.
That guy, human being too. That guy said that he can have complex thoughts at the same time. He says he could do like equations and think about things at the same time and, you know, do all this stuff. He said that they were able to unlock the full 100% of the brain, and he was able to do all these things. Like, he could, like,
be
a master student.
These subjects were able to access 100% of their brain.
Yes.
So you're saying that the average U.S. citizen or world citizen cannot access 100% of their brain unless stimulated by some outside force?
No, they could access 100%. I don't know how they could, but I'm sure they could. But in the project, they were able to use the radio waves.
The electromagnetic
type
of fields that they were trying to create.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to make it a little bit simple. But yeah, they used the electromagnetic rays to unlock the full 100% of the brain. And it's still in effect today. Like, people who survived from the project are still living, and they have 100% full, like, control of their brain.
Do they operate as, like, idiot savants? Or do they operate as an autistic kid, like Rain Man? Or do they
operate more as
a schizophrenic type of person?
No, they operate like normal people.
Okay. So they have that sense of who they are, of what they do, where they came from.
Yeah, well, sort of. They still
have that
sort of false identity that's still part of them still. But they still have their real self part of them. But, I mean, I don't think you can totally become your real self, but I think they'll always will have that fake identity with them. Like, it's almost kind of like having split personalities, but you're not. Yeah, basically, that's the best way to describe it, but you're not, like, talking. There's, like, not two voices or anything, but you kind of have, like, two split personalities. It's pretty weird. I don't know how to explain it, but, yeah, it's like having two identities, but not, like, but having two identities and as one person. It's pretty weird how to explain it, but that one guy on YouTube, if you Google Montauk Project, you'll find him on, like, the television show. He was talking about how he's able to create his own original thoughts and his own true self and all that stuff.
Interesting.
I
was watching the documentaries on somebody posted it called The Grid Keeper. And it was this older gentleman in sort of like a plaid shirt, and he really made a lot of sense. But he also said he had guests on that were descendants of people who went from the Philadelphia Project to the Montauk Project.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how that worked? Or, I mean, in this documentary, he wasn't really clear. He said, well, in a previous life, they were this person. Were they reincarnated or were they, you know, who they are, but just, you know, grandkids of someone?
What? You lost me. Sorry.
This guy was interviewing,
yeah.
Two guys who he said had the same last days as people who were on the Eldritch, and he was relating into the Montauk program. And he said, well, they're this person and this person is like Duncan and someone else. Let me see if I can find the names. Duncan Cameron and Preston Nichols. They supposedly were on the Montauk ship. The Philadelphia experiment ship, the Eldritch, and jumped off the ship when it was, you know, the lights were flashing, the experiment was going on, and they landed in Montauk, New York, or somewhere close to it. And he was saying that the a man in the interview on YouTube that I watched said that he was talking to either them in a different body or them or like a descendant of them. And they were trying to figure out exactly what happened.
It almost sounds like I have no clue, but I don't think he was reincarnated or anything like that, but I mean, he could have been sent back in time or something and then jumped off the ship because he was reporting back on what had happened, or I don't know, I'm just making up opinions now, but I'm not really sure.
I'm going to give a quick read from an interview I read with, it was the interview with posted Duncan Cameron and Preston Nichols. And the interviewer says, could there be a reason for it being underground? And the person who states himself as Preston Nichols states, the reason was essentially they built, see, the Montauk time and space portal was essentially an artifact that came out of what we call a Delta T antenna. You have a picture of a big thing made out of wood with wire shaped like this. It's what they call the Delta T antenna. The portal actually appears in the center of that. If you pump this thing right, they had trouble building this above ground because when they started to test above ground, the fields from the transmitting equipment were so strong that they had to locate it low enough below ground that there would be a neutral point between the fields of the equipment and the building above ground, and the fields from the antenna way below ground, because at that neutral point sat the chair that Duncan sat in. So I have to point out that they did not want any of the wall pulse. See, this antenna took the wall pulse of the pulse modulators of the radar transmitter and essentially put it into Del cross F cross E cross B cross G function. Now, to me, reading this, that is completely Greek. And he goes on to say, which means that they were essentially generating gravitational waves that would evolve into space-time waves in itself. And you can make a time-space portal. Only one end of it was controllable, such as in 83, you would make an extension of it anywhere in the past, present or future, if you wished. If I took this antenna here and added in pulses from a pulse modulator into a radar transmitter, it would probably wipe out every TV set within about 50 miles of it. But they had to keep this thing far enough underground so that the EMR, electromagnetic interference, would not be radiated. They also wanted to make it big enough. I think it was 250 feet. This one was about 10 feet. I think the one we had at Montauk was between 250 and to 300 feet, something like that. This one, the actual portal might be that big, but if you've got one that's 10 times the size and is like that, you could literally have a portal. I believe the portal size was 10 to 20 feet, and they were actually able to create. I could make a portal maybe 2 inches here because the antenna is small. Of course, above ground, there would have to have been certain construction problems. With making the thing below ground, there would... I'm sorry. Below ground, where they have the undergrounders making holes in the floor and pass the pipes and the wires through the floor, and the thing up, you don't have to worry about the wind going to blow it down and that sort of thing. There's a number of reasons why it was underground. So is there any other reasons that you found, Chris, of why it was underground, other than being secret in these strange alignments?
Yeah, pretty much what you said. Basically, you are basically wanting to stop, you know, electromagnetic waves from traveling outside of the area you want it in. You don't want it, you don't want you being found, so basically the sense would be putting it underground. Well, when they first did it, they did do it above ground, and then they, you know, switch it to below ground, but yeah, I mean... Today, who knows what they're doing, but it's probably all underground now. Yep. So, I mean, basically what that leaves us with is, how does this have to do with the Georgia Guidestones?
I didn't really listen to that.
I was waiting to ask you that tonight because I want to, you know.
Well, I mean, if it, you know, spur of the moment question, what does that have to do with it? Well, apparently, people who knew something about the world's future, according
exactly.
to some theorists, built these guys, according to some theorists, built these guys to. Did they, in fact, travel in, did they have something to do with these projects and travel into the future and see what happened to humanity after an apocalypse? Did they say, well, we traveled forward to 3500 AD. The world was in turmoil, you know, everything was destroyed. People, you know, humanity was running around like animals. There was no order. You know, a complete nightmare to the average person, I would think. So how would, if you saw this, how would you think to solve it? Well, you go, if you could get back to the time you traveled from, wouldn't you build something that people would notice that would give instruction to prevent what you saw from happening? Go ahead.
Yeah. Basically, these children, well, this is going to sound pretty out there, but our show's pretty out there tonight anyway, so this wouldn't really make a difference, but these children were basically sent into the future to basically create what the Georgia Guidestones would become.
Mm-hmm.
They created, this isn't documented, but, and I was kind of thinking about this, they basically were using Georgia Guidestones as a way to control people into manipulating their fear, and hence they would be able to use basically get people to do what they want, create fear and create chaos.
that's basically what the Georgia Guidestones, I believe, were created for. Now, basically,
so you think they were created by an all-knowing sort of entity, like,
yeah,
that came back from the future and said, "Oh, by the way, guys, we're gonna screw you over in about 20 years from now."
Yeah. No, it was all created to create fear, and when there's fear, and when there's like anger, Well, this is where this the Montauk Project comes in. This is where, now I created this fear and this anger, and now, now I have a weapon to use to control people's minds. So, basically,
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, the way the Georgia Guidestones relate to the Montauk Project is that they want people to believe in the falseness of what it's saying.
So
there's a lot of things like the Georgia Guidestones. Like, there's many things like the Georgia Guidestones out there. Like, I could name off a lot of things right now. I mean, there is the it was something like the Georgia Guidestones, but it was like I forget. Oh my god, I can't believe I forgot. So I'll just use an example. There's a blue horse at the Denver airport. Everybody says like the horse is apocalypse, or there is.
Aren't the images inside the Denver airport apparently Masonic images that foretell the end of the world, or is it Revelation, or something close to that?
Yeah, basically,
but the blue horse is only a small part of it.
Yeah, they're trying to get people to become scared, and I know this is going to stop right now because I'm air shows out there. So I'm just going to keep going. But basically, if once they create fear, they're going to want answers. And when they get answers, they're going to want to be taken care of and comforted. And this is where the Montauk Project comes in. Now, when this happens,
so what do you know of sort of a conspiracy theory mind? Go looking for answers and help, get led towards the Montauk Project and brainwashed?
Basically, that is what they're doing, is they're basically brainwashing people because they want people to be scared and to be worried, because if they do that, then why would they question the authority? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and this ties into something else a little bit, something I was noticing during the interviews I was listening to about the Montauk Project. They talk about the fact that somebody knew before, like somebody who built the Guidestones, and they talk about the 13 Illuminati families.
Exactly.
Of the world. These have been rehashed over, I think, maybe 30 years, at least, since I've first seen sources saying there are 13 Illuminati families. It's probably been going back 30 years. Do you have any insight on this in connection with the Montauk Project or
Basically, what I want to get at is, all right, let's just say you need food. All right, you go get food from the government. Let's say you need shelter. You go to FEMA or go to the government to get shelter. Oh, well, okay. Now, I need shelter and I need food. Oh, well, you belong to the government now. No, I don't. And this is basically what they want. They want people to say, oh, well, I don't belong to you, but I give you food and I give you shelter. Why wouldn't you not belong to me? Would you want to go starve and go live out in the wilderness? And this is what basically they want. They want to create fear and chaos because they want to control people. They want to control people and control what they eat and control where they live and control their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, why would you question me? And this is what it was created for, the Montauk Project, because they wanted to control people's minds and slowly transition them into a quote-unquote uniform and obedience to society.
So
where they
what
take care of
and, from these bloodlines, the Illuminati, is that the Astors, okay, this is starting for 1 to 13 in no particular order that I can find other than alphabetical. It's the Astor, Bundy, Collins, DuPont, Freeman, Kennedy, Lee, L.I., Onassis, Reynolds, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Russell, and Van Doon. Bloodline. And then they list the Merovingians, which they sort of kind of put at the bottom as a 14th. But they don't really, they say European royal families. That they're saying that the royal families of Europe have one bloodline or several. You know, do they tie into the others? Are the 13 Illuminati bloodlines all American? I recognize a few, Onassis. There was Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. She was married to both a Kennedy and an Onassis, within her lifetime. The Rockefellers, who built half of beautiful downtown Manhattan. The Rothschilds, who are famous bankers. Do you have anything to add on those 13 people?
Yeah, but you also remember in the video, or if you YouTube, where if you YouTube on Top Project, you'll find the guy talking about it. He also talked about the other 300 families which separate the Illuminati from the rest of the population. They're almost kind of like a gatekeeper. Yeah, 300 families.
Okay.
And they're like the gatekeepers, basically. That's basically the best way to describe it. They basically keep the Illuminati secret. But it's pretty weird. And it's basically what they want. They want to create fear, and they want people, they want control. And basically when they have control, they could use their, you know, project to keep people grounded, keep people happy, keep people under control, keep people in this state of transition into what they want. They want some kind of utopian, perfect uniformity, you know, a world where everything's happy and rainbow. Basically,
right.
What they Montauk set out for.
I've actually been watching a
theory.
I've been watching a TV show recently that just started, called Da Vinci's Demons, and it actually talks about the Medici's being powerhouses of Florence and Italy during the Renaissance, and it's probably, all the interactions are fictional, but, you know, Leonardo da Vinci was real, the Medici's were real, maybe some of their mistresses and the interactions with the Pope were factual, but it's a dramatization. But they're making it sound like that the Medici's were trying to control the finances of Italy, but they weren't concerned with the spiritual at all. They left, you know, but they didn't want the church, who seemed to have spiritual and financial interest, to completely take over, because the financial would interfere with the Medici's interest. And in all different twists and turns, you find that Leonardo is being manipulated by or he chooses to favor the Medicis because they patron his art, you know, they fund it. Then you have him going against the church and saying, well, if you give, and they tempt him with information, they tempt him with, like, the Vatican archives. If you give me all of the stuff, I will work for you. You know, I'll beatify or beautify your churches and, you know, temples and whatever you want, you know, apartments, whatever. But it's like, you wonder how, with these sort of talks about, you know, bloodlines and stuff like that, if that's what they were aiming for, or if there was somebody outside that was jealous of their success and formulated these, you know, stories about them to bring them discredit, that based on how they worked, didn't discredit them until several decades after the family was pretty much extinct, you know, or somebody made them go extinct.
Excellent. Yeah, basically, you nailed it on the head. You basically got everything. Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty weird. I mean, it'll be like almost kind of like a managerial society where everything's run by the 13 families. Everything around the world.
By the quote-unquote Medici of the world. The bankers.
Yeah. Bankers. The Medici was they were really good at, like, they basically invented banking. I mean, that's what they did. They invented banking.
Was said that they took their cue from the Templars themselves. The Templars actually were the Medicis. The Templars were the first ones to give sources of credit to people. Basically, if you were going on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, if you lived in England or France, you went to the nearest Templar branch or stronghold and said, here's my fortune, dump coins on table. They write a piece of paper, they send it via messenger that travels faster than you do to wherever your destination is and said, by the way, this person has this much money and please give it to them when they get here, you know, into that distant land in Jerusalem or wherever,
like,
it was.
Old school ATM. It's just like an old school ATM machine.
Exactly. They basically deposited their money with the Templars. They offered open lines of credit, which they speculate that's why the Templars were axed or dismembered, because the King of France supposedly owed them too much money and he couldn't pay up, so he decided to find them, you know, create them as heretics so that he wouldn't have to pay back his debt. But they were the initial. This is 1100.
I wish you could do that to bank today. You're a heretic. I don't owe you any money.
Exactly. It's like,
it's
you know, kind of
banks
do that also. They kind of go after a person almost under the penalty of blood because of the practices of the Templars and the Medicis and any house, you know, really popular banking firm before that. You know, everybody gets robocalls from creditors that they've never even heard of, and the person getting the calls doesn't have any debt. And this person swears up and down that this person has debt. Well, that's the Montauk Project working for you. There's somebody out there thinking that in their reality, you owe a debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you really owe that debt? Or is it just their reality? Or is it your reality?
Mm.
You know,
that's
who's
pretty...
to say?
I look at it that way. All right, Amy, thanks for giving your input tonight. And appreciate everyone coming in and listening to us tonight. Join us next Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time here on Parallaxis Radio. Have a good night, guys.
Good night.